Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, we talked to financial analyst and ex-NFL player and all-around interesting guy, John Najarian. He's going to tell us all about Bitcoin in a way you can understand it, and fungibles as well, in a way you can understand it, which is totally enlightening. Talk to him in a second. First, apartments.com. Apartments.com. We've been doing everything from home, working from home, exercising from home, schooling from home, wishing we were anywhere else on the planet from home. Oh, it's ironic, but true. With all this extra time inside, we've realized how important it is to make sure our place is the right place. Apartments.com, the most listings, apartments, houses, townhomes, condos. Oh, I wish I had apartments.com when I was young and looking for places as a swinging bachelor. What a pain in the butt it was. And now there's a hero known as apartments.com that has entered our lives. With powerful tools like 3D virtual tours, you can explore your new place from exotic locales like your pantry or powder room. Apartments.com, the most popular place to find a place.
And now, Alcoa presents Definitely Not a Jew on the Adam Carolla Show. Dateline, Fort Lauderdale, Florida. A 24-year-old man was arrested after his unpermitted pet escaped. The pet was a kangaroo! Definitely not a Jew!
John Najarian is here. Educational firm is called Market Rebellion. Provides online courses in stocks, options, cryptocurrencies. Mm-hmm. And had a cup of coffee in the show, Chicago Bears, 1981. And we'll get into what that entailed. Boy, let's start with Prince.
Let's do that.
In order of importance.
Yeah. Went to high school with Prince.
Went to high school with Prince. I got bussed into a mostly black high school. Mm-hmm. I was in Minneapolis. We moved from San Francisco to Minneapolis. My dad was chief of surgery at the University of Minnesota. And he said, well, they're going to bus you in. I'll send you to a private school if you want, but these guys got a better football team. Mm-hmm. So went to Minneapolis Central, met Prince, Jimmy Jam, Terry Lewis. Wow. A whole bunch of great basketball players and all the rest, and was one of the only white guys on the football team for the first year or so. Well, I didn't shower for the first 2 weeks, Adam.
Yeah.
Just so you know.
The shame factor, not the rape factor. Come on.
I don't know if it was the shame. It was the fear.
The fear of the shame.
Yes.
Did you guys have a great football team?
We were pretty good. Yeah, we didn't win state or anything like that, but we had great athletes, extremely fast. I heard you guys talking about, you know, everybody goes both ways in those days, as opposed to both ways today.
Sure.
Which
very different
entails something completely different.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, we were very good, and the athletes were tremendous, and I had a great time. Truly enjoyed the experience, and got to meet Prince. And almost cried on air when he died.
Did you know something about, I mean, did Prince, you said he was a great basketball player, but, and you knew that when you were going to high school. Was he playing shows? Was he doing things musically?
He did every talent show we ever had. And, you know, we had a very diverse student body. So a lot of people would just get up and dance when it was their turn for a talent at the talent show. And then Prince would just get up on stage and just play. And everybody's mouth just hung. You know, he was just awesome, even then.
And awesome. The best fullback / middle linebacker on that team, right?
Free safety.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Free safety?
Free safety, yeah. Come on. Consider the guy. Yeah.
A kind of Atwater type?
Yeah, that's right. You know, compact.
Yeah, a hitter. A real hitter.
Brought the lumber.
They'd occasionally blitz him from the weak side, you know, catch him by surprise.
Yeah, he'd pick up the big defensive end coming in and all that. No. Prince never played football, but he had a couple brothers like Dwayne Nelson, sadly, who's also passed. But Dwayne Nelson was a great basketball player. like I said, he comes from a very musical and athletic family.
Wasn't Prince a Jehovah's Witness?
Yes.
And was he back then? Or is that something
you
got into
later?
How
did you know anybody's religion?
Nobody knew anything back then. No.
Except when you got invited to a bar mitzvah or something.
Right.
It was just a weird... It was so interesting because we knew, you know, Egyptian guys and guys from like Indian guys from El Salvador and stuff. And they were just guys that seemed different. It wasn't really, no one really delved that much. No one knew anything about world politics or religion or anything like that. So how did you get from college? Because you went to a small college, right?
Yeah. I tried to go to a couple big colleges. I went to University of California at Berkeley. I went to Cornell University at Ithaca, upstate New York, Ivy League. But unfortunately, since I injured my ankle very badly in high school, so I went to a junior college. I didn't get to accept the scholarships I was offered because I was injured. So I played at a junior college. And when I matriculated from that junior college, I thought I'd go as far as I could in the Pac-10. And so I went to Cal. My brother and my dad had gone to Cal. And then they switched up from a four linebacker set down to a three linebacker. And I was 2 years left in my eligibility. So I figure I'm not going to play because they've already got their starting three from last year. And the fourth was the one I was counting on. Didn't happen. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I ended up playing at a small school in Minnesota called Gustavus Adolphus, named after the King of Sweden.
Oh,
wow.
So that football power.
Problematic now? I don't know. I'm sure somebody will find. Got to get that statue down.
Oh, yeah.
Wait, what was the name of the team? The Powdered Wigs?
Salted Fish.
The Lingonberries?
Salted
Fish. Yeah, it was something like that. No, it was the Gusties. Gustavus Gusties.
It's a cop out.
No one knew what a Gustie was.
It's always a cop out when you just shorten the name. I don't even when they do like the Tennessee Volunteers and then they go, the Lady Volunteers. Yeah. Like, it's just weird.
Right.
You just put, like, for the basketball, you just put the word lady in front of it. I don't know. Yeah. I just keep it the same. But anyway.
It was a tornado, a wind gust, the Gusties.
More or less, yes.
So how did you get to the Bears from there?
Well, I was a free agent then, since I was not drafted. And four teams gave me an opportunity to sign with them. As you know, Adam, because I know you played, if you're a free agent, you can go anywhere. Nobody had the rights to me because I wasn't drafted. So the Bears looked the crappiest, quite frankly, at the linebacker position. And this is coming from a guy who did not end up making the team. So I'm not giving those guys a hard time.
Right.
I'm saying my assessment of their talent was that these guys weren't particularly great
at
linebacker.
This is the early 80s. This is the dawn of the most devastating defense of all
exactly.
time.
But before, I mean, like in training camp, Jerry Muckenstern, one of their starting outside linebackers, got hit so hard in a preseason game that he lost all the nerve down his left side of his shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
So his arm just atrophied away. The starting middle linebacker quit before camp even just because he was making more money trading at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. So they were in a world of hurt, which is why I figured this looks pretty good for me. But then Mike Singletary signed his contract and I got to play four preseason games and that was it.
You know, speaking of Bears linebackers, we don't get into it that much, but I do have find a good shot of Wilbur Marshall, because I have a list. Some say it may be gay.
Okay.
But I have a list of guys who
say it's definitely gay?
Yes. Super gay. It goes from moderate gay to super gay. But I have a list of guys who look the best in their uniforms.
Oh, the Seahorn All-Stars?
The Seahorn All-Stars, right. And Wilbur Marshall just looked the best in his uniform. Now, I'll give you a second till you find a good shot. There's a couple things you need. You need the narrow waist.
Yeah.
Oh, my
That's
gosh.
Where it begins.
Right.
You know what
that
I mean?
Triangle.
Then there's the accoutrements, like the toilet seat neck roll, the things, elbow pads, the things, face mask, the right face mask add-on, but nicely shaped calf muscles, so always good. Not overdone. Just tasteful.
That's right.
You got to type.
You have to.
More than a handful is the problem.
Yeah.
You know who is even better?
Hmm.
You remember Otis Wilson?
Oh, yeah, Otis Wilson, another linebacker for the Bears, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
When I walked in, he had been the number one draft pick the year before I got there. Mm-hmm. Mike Singletary was the number two draft pick the year I got there. Keith Van Horn, offensive tackle from USC, was the number one. So anyway, I walk in, I see Otis, and it's like...
Yeah, Otis is... Yeah.
He looked like Superman. I mean, Otis had a... I looked when... Because we'd get our pants every day... Back in the pros, Adam, they actually give you dry pants
and dry
you for every practice.
Wow.
So anyway, I saw his pants, and they're a 28 waist. And I'm like, a man with a 28 waist?
Yeah, 240-pound guy with a 28
and about waist. A 55-inch chest.
Yeah.
And arms and everything else. And he's just sitting there doing 150s in each hand, seated – Just doing presses like this, and you're just like, oh, my God, you know, this guy.
Well, we'll find a picture of Otis and Wilbur. Old school names, by the way,
yeah.
I will say. All right, we're looking at Otis.
Otis Wilbur.
Oh, is that Wilbur Marshall? Oh, he had a newer face mask back then. Yeah, so he had the tape. He had that good tape along the wrist that came up. Had the fingers taped up. No waist. Just a good, solid... fast linebacker look. And the Bears, arguably one of the best uniforms in the in the league.
Yep.
All right. So we'll wait for
And that's
Otis
before
Wilson.
We lost all of the star players. I mean, the ownership, the Halas family and the McCaskies, lost them all after the Super Bowl. I mean, Otis went to the Redskins. I'm not sorry, Otis. Wilbur
went
to the
Redskins.
We lost so many of the core. They would have won 5 Super Bowls in a row. I mean, there was no stopping them.
Well, they lost their defensive coordinator, right? They lost
Buddy Ryan.
Yeah, Ryan was a big deal, and he went to the Red.
He became head coach of the Philadelphia Eagles.
Oh, right. Oh, yeah. There's Otis Wilson. Yeah, yeah. Good looking players back in the day.
Oh, fast.
And by the way, people had big shoulder pads back in the day, so it highlighted the look.
Yeah.
Now everyone wears super small shoulder pads because they don't want to get caught up. So you realize you're not going anywhere in the NFL.
True.
So you head to the stock exchange.
Yeah, I got cut, and my agent said, do you want to go up to Canada? And I said, no way, because, you know, the playing college football, even high school football, is rough. Playing pro football is extremely rough. And if you're not getting paid well for it, I know people say all the time, I'd play for free.
Right.
No, you wouldn't. Not to get hit like these guys hit. And I was on all the special teams and all that stuff. Oh, I was tired of taking those kind of beatings for nothing. Because in Canada, as a U.S. player, you make almost nothing. It was like I would have made $35,000 or some crazy number for the rest of the season. So
you pay that much in copay afterwards, getting adjusted.
That's a great point. You're not even covered by their insurance.
Oh, my God. Oh,
wow. I mean, they can cut you and you're just gone. And so, but anyway, so I came down to the stock exchange. You're right, Adam. And I worked for my agent on the floor, hated it, but wanted to make it because all the people that watched us practice were all traders.
Were you at the NYSE or the Merck?
The Merck and the Chicago Board Option Exchange. So I was in Chicago.
All right.
And it was, you know, frustrating at first, but then it, you know, after the light came on 3 or 4 months into it, then I fell in love with it. And there's nothing like it because it's like applause. When you do it right, when you're trading and making money, it's like applause, but only you hear it. But it's just building up bills in your pocket. You're just sitting there going cha-ching, 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 cha-ching.
Well, and this is back in the day, too, with, like, the craziness on the floor, right?
Actually,
that doesn't happen anymore.
It was right around the same time, if I'm doing the math right, as the famous Ferris Bueller scene.
That's what I'm thinking. That's what I'm thinking.
Mm. Yep,
when
that's
it was,
true.
Like, lively and crazy. That's yeah.
Right. Yep, and it's loud. It's boisterous. There's probably only 4% of the floor or so that were women.
Yeah,
Gina.
I'm sure.
But, so the guys are just beating each other in the pit. I mean, literally, they'll come as close to blows as they can.
But the hand
they'll
signals
elbow
to
you.
Communicate?
Yep. Yeah. The hand signals, 22, I sold you 22, things like that. But you could tell if people were making money by the smell. Because if it smelled bad, that means they'd been making money for days and they're wearing the same clothes every single day. And if they're losing money, then they're wearing different clothes every single
freshly
day.
Showered.
Well, I'm looking down here at the bottom of the bio, and it says you saw unusual activity in United Airlines and American Airlines days ahead of the 9/11 attacks.
True.
Can you discuss that?
Sure. Well, it used to be that all the trading volumes for IBM or some of these other stocks occurred on one exchange. And then the SEC decided that that wasn't fair. They should trade on all of the exchanges so there'd be competition.
Sure.
And as they did that, all of a sudden, traders became very mortal. Instead of being supermen or women, we were just mortal. We weren't making nearly as much money. So we created an algorithm to look for big blocks of option trades ahead of big events. And it turned out that 3 days, I think, ahead of the 9/11 attacks, we saw all these insurance contracts known as puts trading in only in United and American Airlines. Didn't think that much of it.
Those are the two airlines involved with 9/11.
Yep. Right. Even the ones that crashed in Shanksville or into the Pentagon, all of those were either United or American. They didn't fly on Delta, didn't fly on JetBlue, Southwest, anything. And it wasn't because of security. It was because we think those people were told ahead of time, here's what we're going to use. And when we crash these planes, these insurance policies will become worth a lot.
Were they overseas interests that were doing these trades?
Very good, Brian. Yes,
very
sir. Good.
Obviously,
yeah.
It would be a huge scandal, or we'd know about it if it
right.
was.
Right. Well, we turned our data over to the FBI, and then the FBI told us, why is this significant? We said, because they bought these contracts days before, and only these two aircraft airlines were used.
And that's traceable, obviously.
Right. And so they traced it all the way back to Hamburg, Germany,
really?
Where the terror cells had right. based prior to coming to the United States to learn how to fly down in Florida. Wow. Fly, but not land
right.
or take off.
That is chilling just to see that in retrospect.
Mm-hmm.
So was this the big terrorist organizations that were doing this to try to fund themselves?
We believe so. Or they're just benefiting some benefactor that housed them when they were over there. We don't know.
Yeah, you give us $10 million, we're going to make you $100 million with this deal.
They bought about, let me see, I think they ended up making about $55, $60 million off of the trades and by our calculation. And when we circled back with the FBI months later, they said, yeah, we know who bought them. And we said, well, what's going on with it? And they said, they just shook their head, and, because I don't know if then they used it to trace
Redacted.
Back to the people that were involved and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, that was when we really knew that we were onto the right thing as far as when institutions, not all of it's nefarious, of course, but when an institution wants to get a big position in Tesla, whether it's Nancy Pelosi or whether it's somebody else that's buying that big position, we want to follow them because right. they're right more times than they're not.
Well, that's just luck.
Yeah, it's just luck. That's what I say.
So you built the business up with your brother, Pete, and you sold it to E-Trade for $750 million in 2016. So probably doing better than Wilbur Marshall and Otis.
Oh, yeah. Every day, Adam, I thank the Lord that I got cut.
Yeah.
Because I got cut in Chicago. If I would have taken Kansas City, who also sucked at that time, then I'd have been in Kansas City, and what would I have done? I don't know. I'd go back to college, get a master's degree or something like that. And instead, I was in the heart of all this trading. And then when the light came on and I figured out how it all really worked, I was very fortunate. I mean, right time, right place. I didn't plan it.
So let's talk about the cryptocurrency and the bitcoins and the fungibles
sure.
and all the stuff that nobody really understands.
It sounds. I cringe when we start this conversation because it makes me think of Katie Kirk, Jay Paul.
Yeah.
I think it's called the internet.
Yeah.
This is going to sound so insane in 10 years.
But is this, and also, here's a philosophical thing and everyone can weigh in.
True.
But back in the day, there was kind of the haves and the have-nots, and the haves had factories or railroads or oil yards or something, to create their wealth. And then they needed the people to work at those railroads
sure.
and oil yards and all the factories and everything. But at least there was a chance that if you got a job for Ford in the factory in the 40s, you might work your way up to some office, in 20 years, get off the floor, get
right.
some sort of management or something like that. With this new kind of invisible money, with no real moving parts, you know, I feel like there's just going to be a bigger chasm between the haves and the have-nots. The haves needed the have-nots to work the fields and work the factories, and you couldn't just go screw the little people. Right. Yeah, you had to pay them a wage to come in.
Enough to come back.
Maybe they would unionize, or maybe they would boycott or something like that, or you have to get scabs in, whatever. Now with the invisible currency, are just the tech guys just going to keep getting richer and richer and richer, and the have-nots are going to be a bigger chasm?
I'm sure the rich guys are always going to keep getting richer. Rich guys, rich gals, that's just the nature of the beast. But I will say, Adam, that it really democratizes a lot more, because a lot of the really rich guys didn't believe in Bitcoin when it was $30. Mm-hmm. The guys that did were the Winklevoss twins, and they bought millions of dollars at 30 and under for the Bitcoin, which is now $54,000. So that's why they're billionaires. And now they've built several businesses off of it. But the democratization is that there's an awful lot of Joes and Janes that were – I've got two young guys that work for us for Market Rebellion on the crypto side. They were mining when they were in college. They literally had a bunch of rigs, which are just computers, and they're solving a complicated puzzle. And every once in a while, if you're the best at that, solving this puzzle, they call it proof of work, you win a Bitcoin. And back then, they were just falling out, like, you know, just all over the place. I mean, hundreds and thousands of Bitcoins every day were being minted. And now, through a series of cutbacks that were all pre-programmed ahead, when the person, Satoshi Nakamoto, whoever that is, whoever they are or were, when they created this, they created it so that there would be a limited number of these things. And a great example is, you know, Paul Newman's race cars, right? How many of them are there, Adam?
Wow.
You own most of them, right?
Well, I don't know if I own most of them if you put them all together in one giant hamper. But I am the one who owns the most of them, because the rest are sort of spread out. Someone owns one or two, spread out all over the place.
So the asset gathers its value by its scarcity. So the fewer there are of something, the more it's worth, as long as there's supply and demand factored into that. So obviously you bought something shrewdly that people want. And, you know, it could have been just muscle cars, which I know you also like, but it ended up being, you know, these very specific race cars owned by a very famous guy, now two very famous guys. Yeah. But so with Bitcoin, I think the real issue here is that people want this because it's got a limit. There can only be 21 million ever. Right now, they've already mined about 18.5 million.
When you say mined, how?
So mining, that's that proof of work. So in other words, when you've got a digital asset, right now, the Fed doesn't even print money anymore, really. I mean, yes, they do. But when we say $2 trillion were printed in new bills, no, it's just zeros added onto bank accounts and onto the Fed's balance sheet. It's not paper and green ink and blah, blah, blah. Yes, that still happens because we still use paper money. But they didn't print $2 trillion. They just put up zeros. Anyway, with Bitcoin, people that were afraid that paper money would be worth less, as Warren Buffett would say, not worthless, but worth less by all this printing, instead are out there saying, well, Bitcoin's got a limit to the amount that they can do. So to your question, well, what does mining mean? They prove that Bitcoin is what you say it is. You think it's worth $10,000, this portion of a Bitcoin? Okay, let's see if it's ever been spent or if it's been destroyed or if it's part of a government, a theft ring or like Silk Road, which was drugs and contract hits and things like that, that Silk Road had going on. There are certain Bitcoins you don't want to touch. Hmm. So all these different nodes around the world prove that Bitcoin is unique and that you can spend it. For doing that work, you win a Bitcoin if you're competing with everybody else and you... But that's not what I do. I'm not a miner.
My understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, is Bitcoin, one of the things that makes it valuable, is untraceable. But you're saying it is, in fact, traceable.
Well, that's
it
is traceable. It's both at the same time, because people use it anonymously, but it's 100% traceable.
Yep. When I in 2017, I was touring the world, going to like Monaco and Milan and Switzerland, helping promote Bitcoin and doing projects overseas. And every once in a while, I'd travel with this guy from the FBI. And people would always say, well, yeah, but this is just something people use for nefarious means, like, again, drugs and hits and prostitution or whatever. And he said, which do you think is used more, Bitcoin or dollars? Because he said, $100 bills are the currency of choice, not Bitcoin. Because he said, a $100 bill is completely anonymous. Bitcoin, right. You don't know who the person is, but you know exactly the wallet it went into and where it came from.
And because, there's not again, traces. There's all, not traces of cocaine on a Bitcoin, like a dollar.
Right. What do you? We're printing a lot of money. I'm holding my fingers up in air quotes because we're not printing it, but we're releasing a lot of money. A lot of financial guys I hear say this might be good for 10 minutes, but it's going to bite us in the ass. And I guess inflation's coming and it's going to hurt people that had money put in the bank because it's going to be worth less, not worthless, worth less than it was when all the money got pushed out into our country. So then how do you... Would it be better to have an asset in that case versus cash in the bank? Like, is this going to hurt people? Let's say you had a vacation condo in Palm Springs. Would you be better off with that asset or the equivalent amount in the bank once we started handing out all the checks?
It's a great question. And the answer is you definitely have better return on your vacation home in Palm Springs.
Because that'll keep going up with the inflation versus the $500,000 in the bank is just going to be hurt by the inflation.
I was just down in Puerto Rico 2 weeks ago because I'm probably going to be establishing my residency there. There's a whole bunch of reasons for it. It's a beautiful place, but it also has very nice tax law down there. And it's a U.S. protectorate, but it's not a U.S. state. So anyway, the assets down there, real estate, have gone through the roof because as we print more money and as people want to hold on to their money and in some cases avoid taxes, they go down to Puerto Rico. They've pushed up those real estate prices by 100 and 200% in a year, not like 5 or 10%. And that's happening everywhere as far – not in every jurisdiction the same amount, but – you're seeing lumber prices are up 200%.
I was just hearing about
you're seeing
that.
Sugar, gasoline, oil. I mean, everything except silver and gold. And that's what everybody used to buy. Now they buy Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies because, again, limited quantity. So the asset gathers its value by its scarcity. So if there's only so many beachfront homes in Malibu, guess what? They're worth more, not less. They're worth more. Because you've got the same demand or even more demand now because of stay at home and not having to drive into the office. So it's not as much of a hassle to compete with all the traffic.
So the corporate tax rate is going up. The capital gains is probably – everything's just going up tax-wise. So here's a kind of a global question. I'm always curious why – and maybe we do know. But you know, when it comes to economics – some people will say, or I think most of the people I agree with just go, you got to lower the taxes, lower the regulation, that'll build the economy. And then others say, no, we can spend our way out into a better economy. First off, why is it not established? I feel like we've been around long enough. Money's been going back and forth. It intrinsically, it sort of makes sense to me that, yeah, if you lower the regulation, you lower the taxes, business is going to start adding employees and building out versus the other way around. Do we know this definitively? Why do we always have two camps? And is one camp lying?
Both camps probably lie to a certain extent. So for instance, I agree that if you take regulation, you know, except for the most basic regulation that we need, if you take regulation down, businesses will do better. If you have taxes lower, then instead of everybody hoarding their money over in Ireland, like corporations were doing here, there was $6 trillion, I believe, that during Obama's presidency stayed overseas, was not repatriated back here. Why? They didn't want to pay 35% tax.
Right.
In the United States, corporate tax at that time was 35%. It got lowered now to 20, and the president wants to move it to 28. Joe Manchin and a bunch of people are pushing back, and it sounds more like if they move it up, it'll move to 25. And again, it's a razor-thin margin, as you guys all know, as far as what will end up happening. But if you bring it up too high, you will see people doing what Janet Yellen was complaining about 2 weeks ago, and that is they will shop for the best rate, just like a shopper will say, I'm going to buy this pair of Nikes over here instead of over there because it's 20%
well,
less.
Yeah, I mean, anyone who has – well, two examples, personal examples, which is – but I think this makes sense on a kind of brass tax – from brass tax standpoint. I live in Los Angeles. Our, you know, lots of production going on, raise a – make a bunch of regulations. Everyone goes to Atlanta and New Mexico. Everyone just moves,
yep.
immediately moves.
Yep.
By the way, the people with the kindest hearts who want – we always talk about little guy and raising taxes and giving some back and all. They immediately hop on a fucking plane and go blow right out of here. You know, the other thing that I deal with sometimes is buying and selling cars. You take your car to an auction. It's 10% or it's 12%. It's 12% VIG under 250 grand, and then above 250 grand, it goes to 10%. But the first 250 is 12%, meaning if you sell your car for $1 million, you got to give the auction house, you know, 1.2 million or 1.1 or 1.65 or whatever the fuck it works out with. Well, people started figuring, I'm selling my car for $1 million and I'm giving the auction house $1 million. But by the way, the person giving the auction house $1 million is the person buying the car. So
you mean like $100,000?
Oh, I'm sorry. $100,000 on your $1 million. Thank you, James. Mm-hmm. So, just to simplify it, you're going to buy this car that's worth $1 million, but you're going to pay 1.1 for it. Well, places like Bring a Trailer came about and went, we'll just charge a flat rate of $5,000. Mm-hmm. And so the guy's got his $1 million car, goes, I'd rather sell it there. And by the way, the mark for the car is not $1 million, it's 1.1 because people were formally giving, so I'll sell it for $50,000 or 1 point, you know, and then just give the $5,000 and then we'll do it that way. So people have a way of sort of figuring out how to spend the least and how to keep the most. And so
and
on
corporations,
and so forth.
I mean, you know, they've got armies of accountants figuring this out all the time. You've heard all of the stories, I'm sure, in the last week or two about FedEx and Nike and how little federal tax, if any, they've paid in the last decade. And that's, of course, for a whole bunch of reasons, tax loss carry forwards and, you know, all kinds of legitimate reasons that they can avoid tax because tax evasion is illegal. Tax avoidance is completely legal. And all of them do it, every, including Warren Buffett. They all do it.
How does it work where somebody will hear some senator go, Amazon paid zero in taxes last year?
Well, they basically got to write off all of their expansion, the buildings of their new factories, the various taxes that they paid in other jurisdictions.
Probably bought a few more of those metal racks.
Yeah,
probably. That's
so.
Good. About 150,
up,
200 bucks a pop. Times what, 25?
At least.
Yeah. Times a couple million.
So you buy a fleet of electric vans. And you just – so basically –
and you write it all off in the first year.
So in lieu of paying the government, you grow your business.
Yep.
Essentially.
And which one would we rather? That they grow the business here, putting those distribution centers in L.A., Seattle, Chicago, New York, Florida, Texas, you know, blah, blah, blah. Or if we were going to tax them at 35% like we were before, they'd just say, well, I'm better off earning the money – and keeping it offshore rather than building infrastructure here for them.
Yeah, there's been discussions. So this is an interesting subject. The subject is, well, how do we want to raise taxes. But as I always say, these business guys are fuck a lot smarter than Washington is. I mean, look at these numbskulls. You hear these people can't even talk into a microphone. They don't know the first thing about running a business. So you're dealing with financial geniuses on the other side, and then you're going, well, why don't we just raise it up and we'll get more money in our coffers? And they go, okay, good. And then they go work it out, and then they move offshore. They're now, and they're aware of that, obviously. They're talking about some sort of worldwide, universal corporate tax rate.
That was Janet Yellen.
Right. So she was saying,
stop them from going.
Yeah, she said we shouldn't all race to zero because otherwise, just like as you guys have witnessed here in California, people have fled. High wage earners have fled because you could be taxed up to 13%, I think, just the state tax in California versus zero in Nevada, zero in Texas, zero in Wyoming, and five other states. Zero. So why wouldn't you flee? They will shop, just like you said, Adam, and find the best place for them. Ben Shapiro just left. Joe Rogan just left. I mean, all these guys leave. And these are big wage earners and big companies in some cases.
Elon Musk.
Moved to Texas.
So then what about the notion of a sort of worldwide universal corporate tax rate?
There would always be one jurisdiction that will, you know, break out of that and say, you know what? Here it's free. Just bring your, you know, base your business here. And like Ireland's right now, 12.5% corporate tax. If we go to 28%, there's obviously a difference when you're talking these billions of dollars these guys are dealing in anyway. When you go from 20% down to 12.5%, but there's a huge difference from 12.5% to 28%, and you'd say, "Well, you know, this is they've made our decision for us, folks. In the best interest of our shareholders, we're going to move to Ireland, or we're going to move to Mauritius, or we're going to move the headquarters to wherever, and they're going to go to wherever." So, in other words, Adam, could they do that? Yeah, the G7 could do it. But what about every other location? Because G7 is seven countries. Mm-hmm. What about all the other countries on Earth? And there are a lot of them that are pretty willing.
Flexible.
Well, it's like the runaway productions you talked about.
Ethically
like
flexible.
It's like New Mexico was the place, and then it was Louisiana, and then it was Nevada. Yeah. Someone's always going to offer a lower rate.
Yeah. It would seem to me that ease up on the regulations, get the corporate tax is some sort of moderate number and fucking step back, government.
Yeah,
that's my feeling.
It would be better. I mean, you've seen, again, without even the state tax issue, when you're talking about like being closed during COVID, California was one of the biggest places that was shut down, California and New York. And what happened? All the production companies went to Atlanta. Even with what's going on in Atlanta about voting and all the rest, they're still going down there because that's Marvel Studios down there.
Right.
Tyler Perry, Vancouver up in Canada, Toronto, every place competes and wherever you're treated best, you'll go.
All right.
It's like what you said about Chick-fil-A. You know, you'll boycott until they make the best sandwich and you can't stop eating it.
Yeah. It's just, we cannot. The problem to me is it's kind of my diet and exercise part of life, which is you want to lose weight, it's diet and exercise. And then someone goes, but I have these s'mores bars. Yeah. And it's like, it just doesn't work. It's been proven. It's kind of like socialism. It's like, we got our own take on it. Okay, it doesn't work.
As long as there's only 10 of you, I'm sure it'll be great.
It just doesn't work. You can't jack the taxes. You can't jack the regulation that much without people just voting.
They vote with their feet.
They just leave.
Yep, they walk.
And then
drive, fly.
It doesn't matter if you're getting 35% of zero. You just get zero. And then becomes this project of now trying to lure people back, which is what we're doing with the Runaway Productions. All right. We need to take a break, but NFTs.
Yeah.
I want to get into that. We'll do that with John right after this. Hey, Geico, do you own? Do you rent? Well, you do one or the other, right? You know, it's hard work out there. Owning, renting. You want to save some money? How about you bundle? Bundle your policies at Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle the homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you got so much to do already. Go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could save at Geico. That is geico.com today. That's geico.com.
You will get Ace Man's favorites. You will get awesome booze for $25 shipped to you. You better believe it. You can get Adam's monthly nut. You should get Adam's monthly nut.
some real cool crap. You know that you want that.
You heard Dick. A new month of Adam's Monthly Nut has arrived. April will feature Righteous Felon Beef Jerky with flavors like Chipotle Guevara and Habanero Escobar. Expand laces, because who doesn't want to turn every shoe into a slip-on? At least sometimes. You'll also get a copy of Daddy Stop Talking and a bottle of your choice. Prep your mails box, because Adam's Monthly Nut is on its way.
Back with John Najarian. We're going to forego the news because John's such a fountain of information.
This is the news.
Find this interesting.
Flattered.
So NFTs, another thing I know nothing of.
Non-fungible tokens.
Yeah, I heard Gina describe it in the session before, or segment before I was in here. Non-fungible tokens. So something that is unique in all the world. A relatively easy way, perhaps, that I describe it to people is, how many pictures have ever been taken of the Mona Lisa? Probably a billion or more, and there's 7 mm-hmm. billion people on the planet. Let's say a decent percentage over the years have wandered through the Louvre and taken pictures. How much are those worth? Nothing. Almost nothing, right?
Yeah. Right.
But how much is the Mona Lisa worth? There's one.
Priceless. Right.
$1 billion.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Approximately. So an NFT is that. Not necessarily $1 billion, but what is Michael Jordan's first dunk as a pro basketball player or as a college basketball player? What is that dunk worth if it's a little 5-second digital clip that you own? Nobody else, just you, Adam Carolla, own it. And you're saying, look at this. You know, I can just watch it a million times. Yeah, but that's not the point. It's not watching it. It's that you own something that's that unique. So when something's that unique, like I say, the asset gathers its value by its scarcity. So that's beachfront property right next to Oprah. And what is that worth? Well,
so can
whatever
I,
somebody will pay.
I'd shave a few with Oprah next door. I wouldn't. A lot of people would add on some money. her and Gail. Gail must hate her.
I'd like just to close it like a death.
I think Gail makes that okay.
I'd like to get Gail drunk and find out what she really thinks. But
Mangria.
So here's a juice her up with some mangria. So here's an interesting. So is it sort of like this? We've all heard the Elvis song "Love Me Tender" a billion times, but a family owns the rights to the song. So mm-hmm. we've heard it a billion right. times, like the Louvre and the mm-hmm. picture Mona Lisa, but we don't own anything.
Right.
But one family owns that song.
Yep.
And then so there's an exclusivity thing, but there's also a licensing thing as well. So if you have Michael Jordan dunking the basketball, is it just the ownership that creates the money, or is it the possible revenue generation of selling it, licensing it, that kind of thing? Like I'm thinking,
it depends on what that NFT comes with. I mean,
right.
To Gina's point, non-fungible token means unique in all the world. It's not fungible. A Bitcoin is a Bitcoin. A dollar is a dollar.
Uh-huh.
I can give you one and they're
traded.
All the same.
Yeah.
Right.
But that unique thing, whether it's Michael Jordan or whether it's like right now, Michael Eisner, former head of Disney, he owns Topps baseball cards, right? Topps baseball cards just 2 weeks ago. A SPAC, a special purpose acquisition company, SPAC, SPAC, bought Topps baseball cards and said, we want you to run it, Michael. You've done a great job with this company, with Topps. We're going to buy you for $600 million and all of your assets, and we want you to start getting into non-fungible tokens for all of these. So how many billions is that worth? Here's another one, Playboy. We had, again, that heat seeker algorithm over at Market Rebellion. We're sitting there looking and we see a huge amount of accumulation of stock and options in mm-hmm. PLBY. The stock hadn't done anything for
Playboy.
Years,
mm-hmm.
years and years.
Mm-hmm.
Since they went to digital and went all online, they can, of course, get subscriptions and things, but porn is free on the internet.
Right.
So they weren't exactly printing money, but they have a catalog with Marilyn Monroe, with Dolly Parton, probably with Burt Reynolds on a cover or something, mm-hmm. that could be unique in all the world. Somebody will collect those as NFTs. That stock has now doubled in the last 2 weeks.
Wow.
Just on that alone.
Max Zapata, find me Burt Reynolds on the cover with Playmate of the Year, Gig Gangle.
Excuse me?
Gig Gangle.
Who?
Gig Gangle.
Sounds like you're having a stroke.
But can you imagine?
I mean, get a stroke. Clear out.
The very first.
Wait, do you see Gig? You'll be having a poke.
I can't wait.
Yourself.
The first Playboy cover.
Oh yeah.
There you go.
Wow.
Gig.
So, I mean, so if you had that, and they do, they have the rights to that.
Do a lot of dating in high school. I wasn't a star like you. Yeah.
They could, if they so desired, and I'm sure they will. Turn that into an NFT, a non-fungible token. They'll put it on the blockchain, and they'll say, here is this unique digital, not a picture, but a digital asset that you own, Adam Carolla owns, and he bought it for $20 million.
And it comes with a certificate of authenticity, and I can't remember. What's the other word where you can tell where it's been?
Yep. And it's on the blockchain.
Right.
It's verified by all these nodes, all of these people doing proof of work or whatever.
All right, so now we're I'm going to come full circle here because we were talking
an original man show episode.
We were talking. Oh my god, oh, we're talking boy. Yesterday
Think
about about Blockbuster Video, you know, and
yes,
I was saying I transfer everything in the automotive realm, but I was saying, you know, Bugatti was gone for a long time, but now they're back. But there's value in the name, you know, and then so
Absolutely.
You think, is there any so? But like Playboy, you go, is there any value in Playboy now? I was like, no, there's no value in Playboy, but now there is value in Playboy. And I was talking about all these names that everyone recognizes from the past and how there could be value in those things.
Yep.
So we're going to have to go back and revisit all these brands that we thought were sort of defunct or technology had passed over, no longer necessary.
And find out who owns them if somebody owns that. The trademark, the registered mark, the whatever on whatever it is you're saying. I don't even want to say it on your show because it'll give people too many ideas and we should be out registering these.
Yeah. But yeah, Brian.
Question specifically about what you said, which is Playboy or Old Man 2 episodes or whatever. Explain this to my Cro-Magnon brain here. Those things exist in the world. Someone has copies of that magazine or the box set of the man show. Or there are, Chris found the picture on Google Images, I'm sure, in about 10 seconds. People can download it to their phone or download it to their whatever if they want to see it. Why? What is the, I understand the scarcity. Just, is that just it? Just the perceived value?
Well,
or what is the what?
Because
why
you might own the only one of that.
But it's in the world. It's everywhere.
It's in the world. But so is so are
so
a billion
picture of
pictures.
The Mona Lisa,
yes,
like you said,
yes.
Yeah.
A billion pictures of the Mona Lisa. Why is that one digital picture or image more valuable? Because you own it.
It feels like perceived scarcity.
And I mean, you could put it up for sale. I mean,
I guess it is.
The Winklevoss twins. I'd encourage you guys to check this one out. Nifty Gateway. The Winklevi are very smart. They own Gemini, which is a crypto broker. They own Nifty Gateway and a bunch of other digital asset or crypto assets. Nifty Gateway puts up things for auction every night, NFTs, 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. And the NBA has already sold $850 million. Worth of NFTs. So again, think back to, you know, instead of a Dick Butkus playing card like I might have from his rookie year, if I had that, the only digital version of that ever, and I have that, is that worth more than his playing card? Of course, because how many thousands, how many hundreds of thousands those playing cards are out there versus the digital provable. Unique in all the world, NFT.
Well, so let's talk about something I've been sort of following for a long time. And car example. There are, you know, in the car world, they do a lot of tribute cars. You know, like you could have the tribute car to the Porsche that won the Le Mans 1967 or whatever it is. But if you have the actual car that won Le Mans 1967, it's worth millions and millions versus, you know, something, but not much. Not exactly apples to apples, but there's you wouldn't be able to tell the difference if you looked at each car. It's just one was there and ran Le Mans. The other, somebody built in Simi Valley 2 years ago. Sense. And it's a sort of that. So here's a bigger sort of global discussion. And it's one that we've had, and it's one that I've always kind of thought about. And I was thinking about it in the collector car world, which is several years ago, the big money cars were like old Ferraris and old Lamborghinis and stuff like that. But they were cars that they made 1,200 units of, or sometimes 300 units of, sure, or maybe 150 units of. And then the old race cars had no value because they were just considered old race cars. Now the most expensive cars in the world are the old race cars because there's only one that won Le Mans 1979, and there's a bunch. The way I would always say it is this. I would say I bought an old expensive Paul Newman race car, and I sold a bunch of other expensive cars, but they still made 150 or 200 or whatever. And I would say to somebody, if I ever need a Lamborghini SV Miura one day, I could find one. It'd be really expensive, but I could find one. But if I ever want this car again, I'd have to go find the one guy who owns it and talk him into selling it and fat chance. So that's the kind of approach. But I've noticed that memorabilia, just in general, just sports memorabilia, rock and roll, guns, guitars,
watches,
racing suits, helmets, just cars, just all that stuff has gone through the roof because people want the one of one story. And I feel like this is where we're heading with this fungible stuff and the Bitcoin and all this. Not so much Bitcoin, but what I'm saying is they want that story now, the one of one story.
Right. And you're 100% right. And like, for instance, I had an old Corvette, but the engine blew. So I put a new engine in. Well, you know, dumb me. I should have just redone that engine because,
the numbers don't match.
Right. As they say. And if the numbers don't match, somebody who wants to collect that car is no longer interested.
Well, but there's the story within the story. So they may have made 10,000 of those, but there's only a few with the numbers matching block and head and whatever it is. And so there's the refinable or the sort of story will trickle down within the story as well. Sorry, go ahead.
No, you're absolutely right. And so with the NFTs, it's almost like your Meacham or, you know, any other car auction site that Adam might go to and pay 10 or 11 or 12% for them to auction off your car. When you go to a realtor and they're charging you 6% to sell your home, and the buyer doesn't pay that in the case of this versus the auction, the seller is paid 6% less because Gina and Brian get their 3% apiece for selling Adam's home. Well,
sounds great.
Well,
that's got a nice house.
But when you look at that, though, and you say, well, I would much rather be able to move these things instantly when I need to sell that big asset, instead of bringing it to Houston or Dallas or wherever you'd have to bring the car to, Arizona, or in the case of a house, you know, there's a lot of moving parts. Whereas there's an NFT, you could move it instantly, anytime, 24 hours a day. Mm-hmm. And much less friction. Friction is something when you're getting in and out that you always worry about. That 12%, for instance, that's friction. That's significant. You know, it might end up that the Meacham is making more than Adam made on selling that car in some cases. You know, depending how much if he paid $800,000 for it and sold it for $1 million, he might not be making any money selling that car.
Right. So interesting because some guys, I mean, back in the day, they would say, well, I'd rather put my money into real estate or vintage automobile because I can use it. You know, the money's sitting in the bank or gold or stocks. I can't get out and drive that on the weekends or enjoy it, enjoy my holiday and my place up in Reno or whatever it is. And that is an argument. Like, that's, I've sort of subscribed to that. You get to use this stuff.
Right.
But John's actually saying the counter to some degree, which is this stuff is so accessible and so so easily turned over that you don't have to put sod down on the front lawn and put a coat of paint on the fascia and make it nice, you know, hire a staging crew to come in and stage the house and all this is, you can sell this stuff without, and in a way, it's kind of like we were talking about with business. You don't need the factory, you don't need the warehouse, you don't need the employees, you just
completely intangible.
Have these things all digitally, and you can liquidate whenever you want.
And you could move them around the world. Again, an example I use a lot is whenever you go overseas, they ask you, are you bringing more than $10,000 in marketable securities or cash? And I always look at them and say, how do you know? And they're like, well, we're asking you. And I'm like, on this, or just by memorizing numbers here.
He just pulled his dick out, by the way. But I get
on this, welcome to Jamaica. Have a nice day. On your jump drive or on your cell phone or, again, memorized like some people have done, you could walk across borders with billions of dollars. And in the case of NFTs, Adam, if you wanted to go across over into Switzerland from the United States because they said, we're going to start taxing wealth. And effective immediately, we're going to tax it at 14% in addition to your regular tax just every year, 14% on whatever you've accumulated. If they said that and you had a bunch of NFTs, you could basically just transfer those NFTs over because, again, it's just zeros and ones on the internet, right? You could take that asset and move that asset to Switzerland, to Mumbai, to
and
wherever
you're looking for it.
Well, they can't stop it.
Right.
Because they don't know. It's just a packet of zeros and ones when it goes. Any digital thing that moves on the internet is zeros and ones. So, you know, when you're moving things like that, wealth will move in the future like that. And that's how people like Janet Yellen, she's a smart woman, but she's not counting on that because, again, there's no way they can stop you from moving digital assets, which could be all of your wealth. You could put all of your wealth onto digital assets, move to another country, basically turn them back into whatever you want, houses, cars, jets, whatever. And they can't stop it. That's why they fear it so much.
Yeah. So it feels like, you know how it feels like the government was chasing the internet? Like, what do we do with Amazon and taxes? And how does that work? You know?
Even the questions they were asking Mark Zuckerberg that were so laughable.
I got a flip phone. Is that, would that work with Amazon?
My jitterbug tells me.
My grandson showed me that. So there were just, again, it's just sort of exhibit A, B, C, D, and F of business always being ahead of the government. But like, look, you want a court-appointed attorney or do you want Mark Geragos on your case? You know what I'm saying?
My Armenian brother.
Oh, yeah. And,
you know, I was with, by the way, Shah.
Is he Armenian?
Yeah, Geragos. Geragosian.
Shah from System of a Down?
Yes. I had lunch with him
Hold
today.
On. Give me some credit. That was a good
that was a great
pull.
Call by
you. Where'd you guys go? Carousel?
We went to Phoenician.
In Glendale?
Yeah, in Glendale.
Nice.
Oh, and a bunch of Armenian guys. What a big surprise in Glendale, which is Armenia West. But it was fabulous. And he said he's a huge fan. He's done shows with you.
Yeah.
He loves you and this show.
So turns out I was all wrong about the Armenians. I've moved them up to Luke.
Hey, turns out so was almost every president, because that was in my news today.
That
President Biden is saying, like, this was a genocide, recognizing the Armenian genocide.
Good for him. Yeah. I don't know why it was so hard for everyone else to do that.
Because you don't want to upset Turkey.
Now we can all shut the fuck up about it.
Yeah, because, you know, you couldn't build an air base anywhere else, right?
Exactly.
I mean, that's why we had the issue with Turkey not wanting to offend them. But again, I'm sure Greece would have loved to have a new 10,000-foot runway and a whole bunch of troops stationed in Greece instead of in Turkey. I'm sure they would have loved that.
Well, John, as one of my dear friends who'll go nameless because this is such an offensive joke, said after playing in his over 40 soccer team, after playing an all-Armenian team and watching them get into fistfights with each other, he said, I don't condone the genocide, but I understand it.
Thank you so much for coming.
He's a comedian, John. Come on. You got a sense of
it's
humor.
It's good.
Oh. Yeah. So, yeah. Well, but my sort of court-appointed attorney versus Garagos, and Garagos getting on the case is sort of the difference between all the tech guys and the bit and the fungible guys and all the Nikes, all the Nikes and all the major corporations versus the folks you see pop up on CNN and MSNBC and Fox, given they're like wiping the drool from their lip explaining about systemic racism and what's going on. Like those people are always going to be chasing the private sector because and also, you know, the private sector's heavily motivated, whereas the senators,
the other guys work
all the time in the world.
They work 90 days a year or something like that. How many days a year?
They got time. John, this has been really fascinating. We should definitely
anytime
you guys call.
I mean, I would love to. And I've enjoyed you guys for years. I'm a longtime listener through Loveline. We'd be driving out to a softball game, and we'd be listening to Loveline laughing our butts off.
Wow.
Driving out there. And Dawson with the
play softball at midnight?
Well, we're in Chicago, so we play until like 9 o'clock at night.
With that big oversized ball.
16-inch, barehanded.
Yeah.
Barehanded.
Yeah.
No gloves.
All right, let me hit Alcam, the always-on personal vehicle security system providing constant confidence on and off the road, real-time connectivity and leading technology. Even when your car is off and parked, you have constant visibility wherever you are. Night infrared sensors, 4G LTE connectivity, real-time live view, AI surveillance and alerts, and real-time two-way talk. Alcam puts privacy first. Your video can only be seen by you with the secure video storage in the cloud. From sharing HD video proof with friends or your auto insurer, Alcam makes it easy to tell your side of the story. So you need to protect yourself in this very litigious world, and you want proof, and that's where Alcam comes in. Right, Dawson?
Using the code Corolla20 gives Adam Carolla listeners $20 off any Alcam 5.0, 1, 2, or 3 camera pack. Shop at alcam.com/Corolla and use discount code Corolla20 for $20 off.
Well, I'm going to be in Appleton, Wisconsin, Skyline Comedy Club, coming up May 7th and 8th, and then we're going to do Jam in the Van out here May 22nd, so that'll be live. We'll do a podcast. That'll be a fun show. You can go to adamcarolla.com for all the live stuff. John, you can hit him up with his educational firm, Market Rebellion, and website, marketrebellion.com. You want to look at some Newman race cars, John?
I'd love to.
You'd rather look at the NFTs.
Yeah.
All the race cars.
We'll be turning them into NFTs.
Take a picture of them. Yeah, so Dawson doing a stand-up opening this weekend for Brad Williams, Brea Improv, this Friday and Saturday. Late shows, Dawson. Good on ya. And until next time, Adam Carolla for John Najarian and Gina Grad and Paul Bryan. Say it. Mahalo.
She just knows everything about debut.
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow us on Twitter at Adam Carolla. You can leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744. Catch Gina Grad on Easy Listening and Bald Brian on The Film Vault. And me, Kalen Fondelier, and Gary and Chris on The Water Cooler. You'll love it. And pick up something from Adam Carolla, like tickets, a copy of his movies, books. Everything's there, and we appreciate it at adamcarolla.com.
Hey, Geico, do you own? Do you rent? Well, you do one or the other, right? You know, it's hard work out there. Owning, renting, you want to save some money? How about you bundle your policies at Geico? Geico makes it easy to bundle the homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing too, because you got so much to do already. Go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could save at Geico. That is geico.com today. That's geico.com.